So let's think about some of the practical aspects of discipleship. First question that arises is this. Should we disciple all believers? When you think about what discipleship is, it's a huge commitment on behalf of both friends that we're going to meet every week, we're going to study, we're going to talk about our lives, we're going to talk about how we can serve and give out, and we're going to pray. I mean, this could be a multi-year project. Guys that I've discipled into leadership, I think the quickest it happened was in 2 years. But then I still had to meet with him for another year on top of that when he was leading on his own. So that's more like 3 years. It's usually about 5-6 years of time. Especially if you're studying with a high school student, that could be a long time. You know, the Bible tells us that we're definitely, without exception, supposed to love all believers. Even the lowly is what Paul says in Romans 12:16. So regardless of a person's ability, function, gifts, intelligence, charisma, whatever, doesn't matter. We love everyone in the body of Christ without exception. But does that mean that we're supposed to disciple every single person? What if you have a case of somebody who is a believer, they have potential, and yet they don't want to lead for Christ. They don't want to be a servant leader and give out. Should we disciple a person like that? Well, let's create a clear distinction here between leadership and discipleship. Leadership, as a leader, it is your job, as 1 Peter 5 says, to shepherd the flock of God. So this is for all Christians. And without exception, if someone is in your care, your pastoral care, you're supposed to love that person. End of story. Discipleship isn't that way. This is for specific Christians. We see this with Jesus. He would love the masses. He would take care of the 70. He would teach to big groups. So he had a big public ministry, but when it came to discipleship, very different. Only 12 guys. Leadership, you know, I might come into somebody's life and sit down, and it's really for their benefit. It's there to kind of help them, to give them some wisdom or some counsel. Maybe they got questions, or maybe they just need a friend. They're going through grief. I don't know. It's for their personal growth. Discipleship is for their personal growth, but it's also so that they would learn how to serve others. So in another way we could put this is when I'm just performing leadership duty, it's unconditional. I'm just coming in there. There's no condition. There's no expectation. I'm just there to help that other brother or sister to get built up in the ways of God. Discipleship is very conditional. It's I'm entering into a relationship here with a person saying, I'm in this relationship that we've agreed to because I'm trying to help you to become a disciple maker as well and to multiply. So there are conditions. There could be times where you'd realize I need to step out of this relationship and move on. Leadership, well, just giving pastoral care to people, that's for both genders. So this last week I sat down with a girl, 18 years old, and she was talking about some of her, you know, issues and stuff, and felt like, well, I'm here, so I can probably help her with that. See, with discipleship, it's the same gender. I wouldn't want to ever disciple a girl. Not because I'm sexist or anything like that. It's just that I wouldn't want to be able to get into some of the issues that just really wouldn't be appropriate. You know what I mean? Same thing with girls and guys. What is a guy going to share about his pornography he was watching to a woman? Discipler? Is a girl going to share about girl personal issues with a guy? I mean, I don't even want to talk about it. It'd be kind of difficult to open up. And then if you did open up, that has its own problems. Same gender. Leadership, you know, as a leader, giving pastoral care, shepherding the flock of God, you know, that's sporadic. I might bump into you at a house church meeting and after the teaching, you know, sure enough, we're sitting next to each other. And so I'm going to try and give out some care and love and build other people up. But it isn't, you know, like consistent. It isn't like we're saying every week we're going to meet together at this time, at this place. It's sporadic. Whereas discipleship would be regular, that we're saying we're going to make a commitment to meet together. Again, with leadership, as I'm giving out pastoral care, there's not any expectations. I'm just trying to help. I'm here to help. And I'm not trying to expect that or have you feel like there's any kind of expectation for what you should be doing. On the other hand, discipleship, there are very clear expectations. This builds over time. As you start, as we're going to talk about later, you don't want to lay out this whole, you know, grandiose vision for a brand new disciple. It just would be so overwhelming. It'd be kind of like somebody coming to Christ and then saying, you know, well, let's start to prepare you to become a missionary someday. Whoa, I'd be running for the hills, man. That'd be way too much. Yet at the same time, in discipleship, when we're saying we're going to make this very regular and you're laying out, you know, the goal here is that you would replicate yourself, I want there to be a very clear expectation. Why? Because I don't want to be into this discipleship relationship over years and that person doesn't realize that I'm holding them to a higher standard than other people. And that's something we can go back to. This is something that you want. Well, you're saying you want this, and so I'm going to treat you that way. The point here is we shouldn't commit to a discipleship relationship if we should just be showing Christ-like leadership. Maybe the person isn't ready. Maybe the person doesn't want to. Maybe we see this person and we're like, I'm not sure if they have the ability to lead a house church. In my estimation, the vast majority of people are able to lead, to teach, to counsel. I'm thinking most people can do this. There are some people that just aren't cut out for leadership, and that's okay. But on the vast majority, on the order of many percentile, I would say they're able to do this. Yeah, we got to check for willingness and ability. We don't want to be dragging them along. That wouldn't be a good idea. But to show them Christ-like leadership, we could do that to anybody. We should do that. So let's think about the subject of selection. Selection. When we're selecting who we are going to build in with, we got to think about this very carefully. You know, Jesus didn't disciple everyone. He chose 12. And he selected them. John 15:16. You didn't choose me, I chose you. Why? So that you would go and bear much fruit. That's why. He was looking for certain people to invest in. And so we got to be careful that we're not investing in people that really aren't that interested. We should ask some questions here. You know, do they have questions about the Bible? That would be a sign of interest of somebody I could see. Maybe they've got a spiritual interest. Why are they always asking about the Bible? That could be a sign that they're reading their Bible. That would be a good sign that I should invest some time here. When you give them answers, you know, if they ask a question about, I don't know, the flood, they ask a question about who is Cain's wife in Genesis 4, and I really don't even know how to answer that, so that's probably not a good example, but if you're giving them solid answers, do they respond well to that, or are they just constantly nitpicking everything? Do they search for answers on their own? Are they reading? Are they, as Jesus said, seek and you will find? Is this the kind of person that's out there looking for answers to their questions? That could be a sign. That could be a sign of spiritual interest. That they're saying, really, I want to take my walk with Christ to the next level. When we try and select who we want to try and invest in, this isn't based on whoever asks me to disciple them. It could conform to that. It could be that someone says, hey, would you meet with me? Would you disciple me? Yeah, that might happen, but I shouldn't just, without any kind of thought, just immediately agree to that. I would feel very uncomfortable if somebody says, would you disciple me? And right there and then I say, yes. Oh, I've never done that before. I would want to have some time, some prayer. Let's give this some time here. I want to see that you're actually involved, that you're getting your needs met by the body of Christ, that you're into the teaching, that you're loving this before I start to disciple you one-on-one. on the other hand, we're not waiting for the perfect person to fall into our lap either. I look at myself when I came to Christ. I was a total mess. I could talk about it for, well, until midnight, but you probably don't want to hear all about it. But I could tell you story after story after story. And if we're sitting there waiting for John the Baptist to fall out of the clouds before we're going to start to meet and invest with somebody, we're going to be waiting forever for that to happen. And so we've got to be able to realize people are broken. And I might need to start to get in there and invest some before I can decide whether I'm going to disciple them. Is the person a transparent person? Are they starting to open up about their lives? Or are they a self-righteous person? See, to the self-righteous, Jesus didn't go to them. Luke 8:15, he refers to the good seed. He says, the good seed heard the word in an honest and good heart, and they bore fruit 30, 60, 100-fold. Somebody who's a self-righteous hypocrite, but knows all this stuff about the Bible. I mean, they can tell you every book in the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, and they can quote Scripture, and yet they're totally a hypocrite. That's not someone I would want to start to disciple. Do they initiate serving love with other people? Or are they the kind of person that always wants to be served? See, that would need to change. I might start to pick up on them, but that would be something that we would start to talk about. You know, the key to the Christian life, to true spirituality, isn't being served, but serving, just as Jesus did. Are they interested in people and forming relationships? See, for each one of these, I could come back and say, but what if it's a morbidly shy person? But what if it's a really infantile person that just always wants to be? You know, for each one of these, you could say, you know, they don't really pass that criterion. And yet I am sensing that the Holy Spirit is leading me to disciple them. What I would say here is, this is a real big qualification. You might only be able to answer yes to two of these questions. And that could be enough where you're like, that's enough for me to start to engage and to start to build in with somebody. This isn't a litmus test where they got to get through all of these questions before you disciple them. Good Lord, that would they'd be basically discipling you at that point. These are just some of the signs, I guess, is what I'm saying, as we're trying to look for spiritual interest. Do they respond to God's correction and discipline? You know, when they go through suffering, when God is taking them to task on a certain issue, is this the kind of person that is wanting to turn that around, turning to God? Do they take steps of faith? For me, I'm looking for the guy, not the guy who is necessarily a 10-talent, you know, all-star, incredible person, although that would be nice. I'm looking for the guy who is ready, shoot, aim. That kind of a guy who's ready to jump in and actually try before they realize, oh man, I really don't know what I'm doing here. Somebody who's trying, that's somebody I could have a lot, probably infinite patience with. But the person who just won't even try, I would have a problem. So again, I just want to reiterate, this isn't some kind of a list that they have to answer yes to each one of these questions. That's not the point. The point is, are you picking up signs that there could be some interest that would make you want to move closer and, I don't know, get something going, hang out with them, spend time with them, maybe open up the Bible, pray together, build a friendship. And kind of like a little ember on a fire that if it got some oxygen, it could start to really rekindle. A rule of thumb here is if you're empty-handed, like let's say you're not working with anybody, a good rule of thumb is that you should take more risks. The person who's empty-handed and, you know, they're not working with anybody and then all of a sudden somebody comes through the door and they're a pretty rough case. I mean, they're pretty, I don't know, not relational, obnoxious, rude, anger issue, just kind of wild. If I'm not working with anybody, I'm going to take a shot. I'm going to try and see what I can do. And if anything, I'm going to exert some leadership and some pastoral care to try and help that person. And at a certain point, I might realize they're not ready for discipleship, and that's okay too. Now, when we lunge into discipleship without really thinking this through. I guess that's my point, is to prayerfully think through, is this a good idea? If you poorly select someone to disciple, this could have big ramifications. For one, it could lead to discouragement. If you're working with 2-3 different people who aren't wanting to be a disciple of Jesus, and you're trying to help them, and it's like you're pulling them along in the race, and you're going miles, and they're just going laps, and you're doing that with 1, 2, 3 different people, good Lord, you're going to start to feel like this isn't working. You're going to start to discount the efficacy or the effectiveness of discipleship. You're going to feel like, I've tried that before, and it wasn't even worth it. Why was there a breakdown? Namely, because you just started to work with people who weren't interested in Christ. That was the problem. It comes right back to selection. You could waste a ton of time. There's risks. We need to take risks. We could get hurt. And yet, if we could look back and realize I've wasted, let's see, I meet with somebody for 2, 3, 4 years every week. Let's say 50 weeks out of the year, okay? That's 2 hours. That's 100 hours a year times 4. I just spent 400 hours working with that person only to realize they were never interested. That is a huge amount of time. You could think of what you could do there. What is that? 10 weeks of work at a secular job, 400 hours. We could be using that time. Oh, that would be a shame. It can also, you could reach the point where you start to work with, let's say, 2 or 3 people. And now that's all your bandwidth. You don't have time to meet with 4, 5 people. Discipling 4, that's a lot. Discipling 5, you'd have to be, pretty good. I'd like to see that you're really doing a good job with what you have. The prayer, the preparation that goes into this, and you're saying we're gonna take 10 hours out of the week just meeting. For most people, I mean, you're gonna be in 2-3 different people. And now maybe a willing person comes through the door, they're excited about Christ, and you realize I don't have time to meet with her. I don't have time to meet with him. Oh, did you shoot yourself in the foot? Now when somebody's actually interested, now you don't have time. Nobody has time for him. Because we started working with people who weren't interested. Bad idea. Poor selection could also lead to damage to the person. You know, being pulled along toward Christ, when you don't really want to follow Christ, that's going to create tension. Where now, when I'm coming in to meet with you every week and I'm on fire for Christ and you're not interested, now I'm going to start to be like, okay, you said you wanted to follow God and you wanted to take things to the next level. Are you into serving? Not really. Do you read your Bible? No. Do you pray? No. Are you just as bitter and mean-spirited as ever? Yeah. Are you just as self-righteous? Yeah. Well, that's going to lead to tension in the relationship. And so you could actually leave the person in worse shape than when you found them. Maybe they need to go through some brokenness before you start working with them, and then they see, whoa, I would really benefit from this. I can't tell you how many cases we've seen of somebody who's been discipled for a couple years, and all of a sudden they're just like, I've had it. You know, and I'm not into this, I don't like it, not interested. Then, maybe they, you know, walk away from fellowship or whatever, or they, you know, they just hang around, I'm not interested. Then they go through a different stage of life. They go through some brokenness, and all of a sudden they're like, you know, I really do want to follow Christ. And then somebody picks up on them at that point, and it's like the lights have come on. They're totally different. And so we want to spot people that are actually interested, not people that we're kind of pulling along. So too, if we're working with all these people who aren't into Christ, again, we're running miles, they're running laps, and we're working, let's say, with 2, 3, maybe 4 people, and now I've been into these relationships for 4, 5, 6 years. As leaders, we need to leave room for people whom we can develop into leaders. You know, some people have the gift of mercy, which is really a heartwarming gift to be around. And a lot, these people, they'll see people who are hurting, who are broken deeply. I've seen people with this gifting pick up on 2, 3, 4, 5 different hurting, broken, very difficult people. And they're with them for year after year after year. Part of it is you need to leave some time open for some people that you really think that realistically you could raise into leadership. Because when it comes time to plant, who are we going to put forward to take out this new home church? We need to be able to have, that's a responsibility of leaders, that we're all working toward this together. And so that's something to think about. Am I leaving time for people that I think could realistically make it? I've picked up on people that are broken and really hurting, and I realized at the beginning, this is going to be a long-term commitment, and I'm okay with that. But I also want to leave time for people who are going to be able to lead in the future. We need to remember that it is way easier to start a discipleship relationship than it is to end one. It's kind of like dating. You know, when you start dating, that's real easy. Breaking up is hard to do. And in a discipleship relationship, you know, where you've been hanging out weekly and then you start to realize this person is not interested and I'm putting all this time in here, it's creating dissonance, it's creating tension in our friendship because I'm saying Christ should be at the center, they're saying Christ should be on the periphery, and now I'm at the point where I'm saying, you know, I don't think this is going anywhere. I don't feel like you're interested. I don't think I'm interested. I think it'd be better if, you know, we stopped meeting together. That can be really hard on that other person. Because all of a sudden they built this friendship over time, and now to hear you say, now, I always like to say, you know, we can continue to be friends. That's not what I'm saying. The friendship is still there. It's the discipleship piece that we're going to stop. That's very hard. And very difficult to do, and it's also very difficult on the person. So we need to think about all this before, I guess what I'm not trying to scare you into taking risks, from taking risks rather. I'm just trying to say we got to think about this in advance so we don't do something foolish. This brings us to the necessity of discernment, to be able to discern, is this a good idea or not? One of the things involved here is not just going through some kind of a mechanical list of criteria where we go through each criterion and we're saying, oh, does he pass this? Does he pass that? That's not the point. That's a useful tool, but there's another component here, which is what are my tendencies when it comes to discipleship? Am I a cynical person? Am I a self-righteous person? Am I a blindly optimistic person? Am I a person who's just a lunger? I just love to jump in and all of a sudden, yeah, you're my best friend. If that's the case, I got to check that at the door and say, is this really a good idea? It could be, oh, how about this guy? A guy who was in a couple of gangs, got out of prison for the second time, rampant, you know, sex, drugs, everything, and started coming around to one of our home churches. And everyone else was just like, oh, man, I would not pick up on that guy. Arrogant as anything, major problems. And one of the home church leaders there was like, you know, I think he's got a hunger, a spiritual hunger for Christ. Everyone else was just like, come on, man, no way, not him. He started to disciple him. And 20 years later, that man is one of our senior pastors, Conrad Hilario. So we got to be able to check our cynicism, maybe our self-righteousness, our discomfort. On the other hand, we don't want to be lungers either. We got to be careful on both ends. I think the passage which has corrected me on this is 1 Corinthians 13:6. Love rejoices in the truth. We're facing the facts. They do have problems. There are issues here. I know the issues. Okay, I'm well aware of that. We're not blindly ignoring it like there's no problem. On the other hand, Paul says in the very next verse, love believes in all things. And so even though I know the flaws, I realize that there's hope here. They could become somebody. If only I could get involved and underneath the leadership and the power of the Holy Spirit, I believe God could change this person's life. It's a way of staying corrected from either hyper-pessimism and cynicism and also a hyper-blind optimism. One expression I like to use is spiritual trajectory. It's not where they're currently at. You know, they could be addicted to drugs. They could be on parole, getting out of jail. They could be a prostitute, you know, who's trying to get their life together. What's their trajectory? Where are they moving? You know, the ship might be in way out in the middle of the ocean, but is it at least facing north? And is it moving north? For people like this, I like to ask, are they moving in the right direction? Yeah, I see where they're at, but where is it that they're going to be if they stay on the same trajectory? And finally, we should take a tip from Jesus, who spent an entire night in prayer before he chose the 12 disciples. Luke 6:12. Why did he spend the whole night in prayer? What was he doing up there? It can't be a coincidence that he comes off that mountain and all of a sudden he's like, you, and you. He must have gotten some supernatural leading, and man, does this happen. When you start to pray to God, you know, I really do want to start to disciple that person, but I don't know if you want me to. And very often, very clearly, God will affirm or tell you to wait, or he'll say, no. I've had this happen. Very odd. Sometimes people you think would be really great, and you go to God in prayer over weeks, and then all of a sudden you're like, I do not think that would be the right move. Other people that don't seem that great at first glance, you know, First Chronicles 16 says that God looks at the heart, not the outward appearance. And he can see into the heart and say, yeah, that would be a good person to meet with. Let's think about starting off discipleship. So let's say you've got somebody that you think is moving toward Christ. They're on the right trajectory. They're interested. They're growing. How is it that you'd start off discipleship? This shouldn't be mechanical. Anyone who gives you the 1-2-3-step process, you read about this in discipleship books, they're lying. There's no such process. Apparently Jesus could do it. He would just go up to him and say, hey, follow me. That's never worked for me. No two people are the same. So for some people, you could give them a really great vision and just say, hey, one of the things we do here is discipleship, and this is what it is, and that this is the vision, and exponential growth, and doing something meaningful with your life. I was one of those guys. I heard that kind of a vision. I was just like, oh, man, that sounds awesome. Somebody else, they might be like, whoa, that sounds really intimidating. So maybe you start off a little bit slower. What we need to avoid here is binary thinking, where we can't see shades of gray, where it's either I pitch this person this huge vision of walking with Christ for the rest of their life in personal discipleship and meeting every week, and or I do nothing. We just talk about the calves, or we talk about the bachelorette, and we don't talk about anything spiritual. We got to think about this as a continuum that we're engaging more and more and more until we're reaching a state where we can see and get a good eye on where this person's at. The best place to start is a relational model, a spiritual friendship. So getting time with the person, doing things which are enjoyable, learning about each other, sharing things you're going through, things you're struggling with, hearing about them, doing things that are fun, and also talking about spiritual stuff together, things you're learning. Answers to prayer. I love when my prayer life is healthy and I'm seeing answers to prayer, being able to share that with a new guy I'm trying to help. And then all of a sudden you start to hear them sharing about this too. And it becomes kind of natural that when we get together, all of a sudden we like to talk about God and we like to talk about people we can serve and we like to talk about our group and what can we do? And you start to build this friendship. Picture a triangle where at the different corners of the triangle, you're far apart. And yet when you both start moving toward God, I'm moving toward God and so is he. And that brings us closer together. All of a sudden we start to build a supernatural unity, which is very, very relational, very normal. At a certain point, you want to suggest a short reading, a short study. In my mind, I think just opening up to a verse is pretty good when you're building a friendship. Quoting scripture from memory. Proverbs 13 says, do not compliment yourself. How's he put it? Do not speak for yourself. Let another man speak for you. Let a stranger's lips praise you. Being able to quote some proverbs, quote some teachings of Jesus, opening up the Bible with them and giving them some, showing that the Bible can impact their life. And then maybe even pulling out a reading. They're really talking about something they're going through and saying, hey, we should read this verse on this. Or maybe you actually say, hey, there's a good paper we could read on this. What do you think about reading through it together? Or you could even say, well, that's a complicated topic, what you're discussing. It would probably take about 6 weeks to study. Would you be into a short study? And you're not committing to anything beyond that. It's just, you know, we're hanging out for 6 weeks, and once that's over, we're done studying. That's the end of it. And at the same time, we want to get advice on how to move forward. Would this be a good idea? How do I know this is the next step? Getting counsel. In the abundance of counselors, there is wisdom. A lot of this is very intuitive, knowing how to build a relationship with another person. And for some of us, we're not that intuitive. We don't know what the next step would be. We need to rely on people who are more gifted in these areas to kind of give us some direction. In my view, we want to give vision along the way. I remember we were reading Master Plan of Evangelism by Coleman, and my buddy was meeting with me, who led me to Christ, and, you know, he would just open up the Bible. We'd be at a coffee shop, and he'd open up the Bible, and he'd read something. And at one point, I was like, you know, I like hanging out like this and stuff, but I just really don't want to study the Bible together. So he was kind of like, So the next week, we hung out, and he pulled open the Bible again, and I opened up to 1 Peter 2:2. Like a newborn baby longs for the pure milk, so you too should long for the word. He read that to me, and I was like, huh. So I guess I should be into the Bible. And he's like, yeah, to say you're not into the Bible, that's exactly what you need and stuff. And so it was very incremental. It wasn't like all of a sudden I realized, you know, we're in this real committed discipleship relationship. I remember one time we were sitting at a teaching, and the subject was on discipleship. And I was like, whoa. Yeah, I love that. I totally would be into that. And my buddy was like, that's what we're doing every week. You didn't know that? I was like, oh, no, I just thought we were reading the Bible and praying and you know, talking about our friends and talking about the group and how we can build them up. And I just didn't get it. It was so relational that you don't need some kind of a marker. And then as the person progresses, we're recalculating. He thought that I might be drawn and called, not drawn, but called to urban ministry because I'd taken a real interest in that as a young believer. I'd volunteered down at UC Urban Concern 3 times a week, and I think he was kind of seeing maybe that's where God was calling me. Then at a certain point, he realized maybe it's a different direction, and so he started giving vision over here. And it became very clear that, you know, you don't really know. You know, at the beginning, I remember taking one of those spiritual gifts tests. That didn't do me any good. None of the things on there I'm gifted in. Then I took another one about 12 years later in seminary, way more extensive. My top 3 gifts I tested at, I don't have. And the top 3 gifts I do have didn't even show up on the test. So basically what I'm saying is we're trying to move step by step and trying to see where God is moving, and that's the vision that we're pursuing for the person. Rather than right off the bat saying, hey, are you committed to meeting together for the next 6 years, possibly, to become a home church leader and to give your life away to Christ, I think it should be relational and trying to see where is God leading this person. Well, that brings us to dropping disciples. What if you get into a situation where you realize this isn't going anywhere, the person isn't interested, and you've decided, I realize I probably should end this. This is doing more harm than good. And it's putting pressure on a person Well, they're not really interested. So I don't like that. And I'm also putting in a bunch of time here. I'd rather just have a friendship with this person. Well, before you make that decision to drop somebody that you've been discipling, I would plead with you to ask for counsel from your colleagues, from our pastoral staff. We can help you with this. Very frequently people will say, well, I've tried everything. I've tried encouragement. I've tried studying. I've tried this and that, and really tried to work on our relationship. And very often people who say, I've tried everything, really haven't tried everything. And so there could be something else. I am regularly shocked when I go to colleagues saying, hey, I'm really running into a brick wall here. I don't know what to do. Here, I've been thinking over this person for hours and praying for hours, and then all of a sudden they come in with something totally out of the blue. And I'm like, whoa, I didn't even think about that. And we want to be able to seek counsel before we make a big decision like this. If we do end up telling the person that we want to drop discipleship, this shouldn't be a surprise to the other person. It shouldn't feel like out of the blue, okay, we're done. How do you think that would feel if you were on the receiving end of that? What that probably implies is that you weren't giving admonition, that you weren't raising proper tension of, you know, why aren't you interested? And what's the issue? What am I not seeing? This should be that there is proper movement toward the person, not away from them in fear, toward them to boldly speak truth and love to the point where this person's realizing, you know, this is probably moving toward, we're not going to be studying together anymore. And so this shouldn't come out of the blue. In fact, when you say, I don't think we should meet together, they should be on the exact same page. That would be a good sign. When we drop people, it should usually be for omissive sin. Omissive sin is that they're not serving, they're not loving, they don't move toward people, they don't read their Bible ever, they don't pray ever, they're not trying, they're not doing things. See, a lot of people in the institutional church would say those are the people you should disciple. We would have the opposite view. People who are commissive sinners, who are going for commissive sin, you know, they're blowing up in anger. They're trash talking. They're, I don't know, going for fornication, for drugs. Okay, if you drop a person like this, what do you think is going to happen? It's only going to get worse. And then you're going to have a real problem on your hands. It'd be better if you, as they're spinning out of orbit, it'd be better if you move closer and closer and closer to them so that orbit isn't so big and you can actually start to move in. And if the sin is that big, this could lead to a case of formal church discipline. That could actually get to that point. What we don't want to do is move away from the person. That'd be the wrong move. Because really what we should be doing is bringing formal church discipline if it's that bad. We never want to drop people out of contempt or out of frustration. We never want to say, you know, call names, name calling, or anything like that. We want to be at peace about this, that we're not angry with them, we're not frustrated with them. We shouldn't go into a conversation to drop a disciple if we're angry with them, we're frustrated with them. It's not going to help. It's ungodly. It's sinful. Any anger we have should be a godly anger. It should be for the sake of the other person, not because I'm so frustrated and hurt. And so we might actually have to put this off until we realize we're under control. In the majority of cases, it would be better if the person would drop you. Where the person is just like, you know, you keep talking to me about this major jealousy issue in my life, or my gossip, my trash talking, my drug habit, my this, whatever it is. And be better if they said, you know, I don't want to do discipleship anymore. That would be better than you having to drop them. Because to me, what that would mean is you've actually reached the state where you have spoken the truth in love to the point where the person realizes, I don't want to do this. And that would actually be better than the alternative. At the same time, one of the big problems I see when somebody, you know, drops a disciple is that they move away from them. And it's very easy to do because there's often a sense from the other person where they feel like, well, you don't want to hang out with me or you don't want to be with me. And so you have to keep moving toward them. You can't move away. And so initiating with them, engage with them. When you see them, talk to them. So how things been going? Pray with them even. We want to show that we're still, you know, friends. We still love the person, but we're just not into discipleship. That's a different thing. I've wondered about this. If it would be good, rather than dropping a disciple, if it would be better just to say, why don't we take a break on this, on discipleship for 2 months? I don't see that you're moving forward. You seem kind of stuck. And why don't we meet up in 2 months, how about November 1st, and why don't we reassess and see if we should keep doing this? It would kind of be a way for them to see what they're missing. It would be a way to raise tension. And in an interesting way, it would be a means through which the person might start depending more on God rather than on you. Where you're showing up and you're force feeding them. Maybe they need to learn how to feed themselves a little bit. That would be a good move to make. I haven't done it. I haven't seen it done. I'm just kind of wondering if that'd be a good maneuver. We got to think creatively about this. All right, let's think through an outline of time together. What should discipleship look like? We're going to argue those four components we talked about. Study, coach, counsel, and pray. Let's think about that first piece. When you're starting discipleship with a person, you want to start small. I like to get into the Word at deeper levels with new or mature disciples. So with a new disciple, I would be going through a short book like Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, something like that, where it gives the person confidence that they can understand the Bible. They don't need somebody to interpret it for them. And you're basically teaching them something small and short. I'm thinking 20 minutes. It's not really long, but something where they're getting to the point where you realize they got something out of that. They really liked it. Eventually, this should be the bulk of our time together when we're sitting down to disciple. If you have 2 hours, or a good rule of thumb is 45 minutes or an hour should be spent on reading together, studying. What else are we doing with our time? What are we talking about? Discipleship is teaching. That's what it means, is to teach, to be a learner. And we want to, when we're thinking about studying and what to study, we want to think about what's best next. You talk to people and you're like, so what are you studying with your girl? She's got, a major anger problem. And they're like, well, we're studying D.A. Carson's Introduction to the New Testament. Okay, maybe if she was a leader, that's what you would study. How about studying something that would be germane to where she's at, not where she will be? And picking things that are going to be important for where they're at the time. And for the leader, we want to pick something that would be harder, for sure. Second, we want to do coaching. Coaching is where we're trying to help them to build a personal ministry of their own. So some good questions to ask that I like are things like this. You know, what are some unique needs that other people have that you could serve? You look around this group, what do you see are the needs? As the leader, you're basically inviting criticism of your leadership. You're saying, we're missing things. What are we missing? Well, you know, we got a big problem with blank. Man, I didn't see that. You're right. You think you could take that over? Yeah, I think I could. What's the next step with blank? You know, we're thinking through how to help the morbidly shy person. What do you think the next step would be with him? How do you think we could help him? Or somebody is, you know, feeling really lonely. Maybe they're going through a mental health issue. What do you think the next step would be? And helping people think in terms of movement. What are you studying with so-and-so? these days. Let's say they're discipling a person. If I ask that question, and they've been studying sit, walk, stand for a year, I'm going to realize they're not really studying. They're not reading that book. How long is that book? 50 pages? And I'd like to be able to hear, oh, we started a new study, and then we finished that one, and we moved on to the next one. And those are good questions to ask to really see if they're discipling well. How's the house going? That's always a good question. With a bunch of Christians living together in a rooming house, people are going to be like, oh, man, we had this drama this week. We had this problem. Oh, we had this good thing happening. What happened? And it really draws out how to counsel and to coach their relationships. So who's going to step up and say something to him about that? He slammed the door and ran out of the room? That is so immature. Who's going to say something? And this can draw out a lot of that. What kind of things are you seeing in our group? What kind of tendencies, patterns? What kind of things are you not seeing? That's one of the big questions of discernment. Not just what am I seeing, what am I not seeing? Why is it that we never talk about this? Why is it that they never talk about that? You want to compare your discernment on how coaching is going with other people, other coaches, and to try and get their input. What do you see that I don't? And yeah, we're meeting a couple hours a week and we're friends throughout the week, but other people are going to be able to see things that I don't see. Thirdly, we want to counsel. Counseling in the Bible is basically described as to encourage, to exhort, to put things on people's minds. I mean, it has a really broad range of meaning. And so this is basically helping the person. If coaching is helping them to serve others, counseling is helping them with the issues that are stopping them from being able to serve and to give out. So some good questions here might be, you know, what has been hard to talk about lately? Or what is one thing that you haven't shared about this issue that's been hard to share? And creating an environment of grace where people feel like, I can talk about this. Or you say, has your blank been hard to talk about lately? Has your eating issue, has your depression, has your whatever, has that been hard to talk about? I like that question because when people ask that of me, if they say, how's it going in this area, I usually just say, fine. But if they say, has that issue you've talked about hard to talk about lately, kind of gives me the green light to be able to say, yeah, it has, and here's why. Maybe something happens to the person or they're going through a hard time. And to be able to say, you know, if I was in your shoes, I'd be feeling pretty angry. I'd be feeling pretty betrayed, pretty isolated, lonely. And then I like to follow up with the question, is that how you're feeling? I don't like to assume and put words in people's mouths, but is that how you're feeling? And they might be like, no, I don't feel lonely. I feel depressed. Or, I don't feel depressed. I feel angry. But to try and empathize with the person so they can understand. With counseling, we're going to have a whole half of a quarter on this, but one of the things to look for is signs that people are holding back. Like I start to look at the arithmetic here. They just flunked out of school. They just got dumped. They've been, bunkered up in their bedroom for 2 weeks. And when I see them, everything is a joke and everything's funny and happy. See, I just can't believe that. The person is sitting there, playing video games and not doing anything with their life and all this, everything's sarcastic and joke, 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 joke. You have to be able to see through that to realize there's real issues here. A good rule of thumb when it comes to counseling is that we're not trying to get into every single issue in the person's life. A good rule of thumb is we're trying to counsel areas where people are stuck. So if the goal is to become a servant, sacrificial lover of people, that's our goal, and they're trying to do that, but something is stopping them, that's a good time to counsel. You might say counseling is often reactive rather than proactive. It's when an issue pops up that you're like, oh, let's start to address that. Rather than discipleship where it's just sitting around the whole time talking about people's problems, which really isn't counseling. Counseling is trying to help the person out of the rut that they're in so that they can turn into someone who is into love output. That's counseling. The other version is really just being a doormat where people are complaining at you and telling you all their problems. And that isn't counseling. You might think of it like this, like, I don't know if you've ever had the situation where your car gets stuck in the snow. My tires last year were bald as a baby's bottom, so I was stuck in, you know, a centimeter of snow. And basically the picture here is when the person is stuck, you're trying to come in there to help them to get out of that stuckness. And so that's when you come in with counseling. Along the way, as you build a relationship, you're going to get into other forms of counseling, you know, family of origin, issues, sanctification issues, and those are going to come up, and that's great when it comes up. But really, we should keep the focus on counseling the person when they're really trying to love and build relationships, and they just can't. Finally, we want to pray. Study, coach, counsel, and pray. This is a key time to sit with your friend and to model faith. So now we've done a bunch of study. We've talked about how we can help others and to build a ministry. Maybe we've done a little bit of counseling. We've talked through some issues. And now it's time to get before God and remind the person, we need you, God. And to teach them how to pray, to model faith. A lot of times you meet and things look pretty grim, and yet you're sitting there before God saying, God, I know you're with us. And sit there and pray over the issues you discussed, and you feel that lifting of the Spirit, your Spirit. We realize this isn't on our shoulders. The pressure's on, but it's not on me. It's not on us. And to try and remember what that person shared with you and to pray for those things that they brought up. And that would be a pretty good outline.